A lot of people these days are saying, I've got Georgia on the mind. We're going to talk about Georgia and the runoffs, potentially the battle for the Senate. Not potentially. I mean, how the vote goes in early January related to the Senate could change the whole future of this country. I'm Jerry Newcomb. Our guest is Jason Pye. He's with FreedomWorks, freedomworks.org. Jason is the Vice President of Legislative Affairs. Jason, it's great to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks, Jerry. I appreciate you having me.
Sure. So first off, as an introduction to the whole topic, how important are the Georgia runoffs?
Well, I mean, they're very important. I mean, I don't think your introduction was off at all. I mean, I think this is the battle for the control of the Senate. After the election results that came down earlier in November, you're looking at 50 Republicans and 48 Democrats right now. And, you know, these seats down here in Georgia, if they both go to Democrats, it's a 50-50 Senate with Kamala Harris breaking any ties. And that could pose a lot of problems, particularly if they try to get rid of the filibuster and do some of the more dangerous things that they've been talking about over the past couple of years.
Such as?
Eliminating the filibuster to pack the Supreme Court to.
Let me stop you for a second. For those who hear the phrase, but they don't know exactly what does that mean, spell that out, to pack the court.
So the packing the court basically means you go back to 1937 and what Franklin Delano Roosevelt did, which was he threatened after a string of defeats at the Supreme Court, he threatened to expand the size of the court to a maximum of 15 judges, basically one new judge for every judge over the age of 70, to basically be able to get his agenda through the Supreme Court. And what Democrats have floated was just expanding the size of the court, hoping that a Democrat would win the election so they can pack the court or add more justices who would be favorable to Biden's agenda. That's what they've essentially threatened to do. In some cases, it's not essentially. Some cases, they're outright saying it. Some are calling it court reform and so on and so forth. Now, some Democrats will say that Republicans have packed the courts. What they're trying to gaslight voters with is basically saying that filling legitimate vacancies that arise during a president's term with the president's appointed judges or justices is somehow court packing. That is not court packing. That is a constitutional Article II duty that a president has and responsibility that a president has with advice and consent of the Senate. What Democrats are talking about doing is much more ominous. It's much more dangerous, and it really is turning the courts, federal courts in particular, the Supreme Court, into a political tool.
All right. What else is at stake if the Democrats win those two seats in Georgia?
I think there are a lot of other things in terms of health care, in terms of federal spending. In terms of healthcare, Biden's talked about implementing a public option, which would allow people to buy into Medicare. What that is ultimately going to do is really accelerate our path towards a Medicare for all government-run system where private insurance cannot compete with the federal government at all. It will, because Medicare has the ability to undercut private insurance companies. Private insurance companies will eventually see that they're taking too much of a loss on their private plans, and we'll stop offering them. That's the end goal for Democrats with a public option, is to transition us into a completely government-run single-payer healthcare system. On the spending side, look, we already spent $6 trillion last year, which is way more than the federal government was supposed to spend, what was projected to spend in response to COVID-19. And they still wanted to spend even more. We have a budget deficit last year that was greater. That was the biggest budget deficit we had seen since World War II. Our interest, our debt to GDP ratio, which is the amount of debt we had compared to the size of the economy, is already at 100%. It's expected to skyrocket to 150% in the next the next few decades. At some point, people are going to start wondering if America can pay back what it's borrowed. And that's going to cause interest rates to rise, and we'll eventually just be drowning in a river of red ink, and that'll hurt our long-term prosperity and economic opportunity for people of all races and all genders and all all Americans will eventually suffer as a result of that. So I fear that this is the direction Democrats will try to move us in if we lose these two Senate seats in Georgia.
Do the Democrats have to win both seats? And if the Republicans, let's say, win one and the Democrats win another one, then the control is still with the Republicans, correct?
That's correct, yeah. So, I mean, so it's 50-48 right now, with not counting these two seats. If Democrats win both, it's a 50-50 tie.
Wow.
And because Kamala Harris would be vice president, she's the tie-breaking vote, which means Chuck Schumer would be Senate Majority Leader. Democrats would have the majority, albeit a very slim majority. If Republicans lose one of these seats, it's a 51-49 Senate, the same as it was in 2017 through 2019. And Republicans still have the majority.
Well, what do you make of the fact that George Soros and people like that, they spent gazillions of dollars of money to, let's say, defeat Lindsey Graham, Mitch McConnell, you know, and they lost. And, you know, I don't want to gloat or anything, but there were several examples like that. And they did lose. Now, how does that apply? Those principles apply, let's say, to these two candidates in Georgia, which are Kelly Loeffler, these are the Republicans one, Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue.
Well, look, I mean, I think what you're talking about in terms of the outside money, not just outside money, but money that was spent in South Carolina and Kentucky. I actually went through some of that data just last week, and $160 million was spent trying to beat Susan Collins in Maine. She won by almost 9 points. You know, I can't remember how much McConnell's opponent raised and had from outside support, but it was more than $100 million, and he won by 20 points. Lindsey Graham won by 12 points, and his opponent raised $100 million on his own.
Wow.
That doesn't include the outside support he got, and Graham won by 10 points. I mean, money doesn't win elections, but
it sure helps.
It sure helps, that's for sure. And it can make races a lot tighter. And being a Georgian and someone who still lives in Georgia, Jerry, I can speak with experience on this. Georgia is going to become the center of the political universe for the next, until January 5th when these runoffs take place. And the amount of money that's going to be poured into the state is really obscene. Now, I'll tell you right now, I don't have a problem with people spending money to in elections, but our side has to be just as prepared, and I'm hoping we are prepared to knock on doors because the ground game is really where it's going to be at. It's voter turnout. I know that sounds trite and overused because every election is about voter turnout, but in a runoff, that rings especially true. We have to make sure our voters are getting to the polls. They make sure they're requesting their absentee ballots. In Georgia, we vote by absentee. We don't vote by mail, or we vote in person. So we either get people requesting those absentee ballots sent to their home, or having them show up during early voting, which starts on December 14th, and then or showing up to the poll itself on January 15th to cast their ballots for David Perdue and Kelly Loeffler.
I understand that Georgia is one of the 30 states that has the highly questionable software, the Dominion program, and then I guess there's something called Smartscape. I don't exactly how I forget. Anyway, to explain that, and is it possible that Atlanta could, through corruption, could cause this to turn around, even if the majority of Georgians voted for, let's say, Perdue and Loeffler, but the votes would be taken away from them through nefarious means?
In terms of Dominion and what it's done, I mean, these are new voting machines. These were bought a year or so ago by the Secretary of State's office, who is a Republican. His name's Brad Raffensperger. And by all accounts, Brad's a good man who was a conservative legislator when he served in the Georgia House of Representatives. But you question his judgment on moving towards these new voting machines in a very important high stakes election. Look, let me tell you something about Georgia. And anyone who has followed Georgia politics as closely as I have, and as well as many of my friends have, Fulton County is the laughingstock of election night in Georgia because there is always a problem.
That's Atlanta.
That is Atlanta. That is where Atlanta is located, in Fulton County. And it, that is, it is Fulton County always finds some way to screw something up. And on election night, they stopped counting ballots at 10:30 at night. And everybody was kind of scratching their heads, wondering why they did that. And then they, you know, obviously took several, I think a couple of weeks. I think Georgia was just called a day or two ago. But
wait.
I mean,
they
Fulton
were,
County,
tell me what, in what results?
Biden won by 12,000 votes.
Allegedly.
In Georgia.
Okay.
That's what the, that's the official, that's the call that was made. But, you know, and they were just today they finished the manual audit of Georgia's election results. They did find 2,600, ballots that were uncounted in Floyd County, Georgia, which is, kind of northwest Georgia. It's in Rome, Georgia is the center of that, or I guess the county seat, in that county. But so it's a very Republican county, but they found 2,600 votes. I think it increased Trump's vote total, but not enough to cut into, substantially cut into the lead. So those are the, as far as I know, the only votes that they found that weren't actually counted.
You know, let me ask you a question, Jason. It would seem that Georgia is overall conservative. How is it that they would vote for Biden as opposed to Trump?
So Georgia's, I've been telling anybody who would listen to this for years that Georgia's changing. And Metro Atlanta, which is where I grew up, my hometown is Jonesboro, Georgia. For those of you who have heard of the book Gone with the Wind, that is where I was born and I was raised in that area. Georgia's more is demographically diverse than it's ever been. It's more college, there are more college graduates who are living in the area than there have been before. And you look at the trends in Metro Atlanta and you can see where things have been changing. And, you know, the Republican strong back in 2004, Jerry, George W. Bush won, every Metro Atlanta county with the exception of three. And that was Fulton, Clayton, and DeKalb. And Clayton and DeKalb are right next to Fulton County. But Clayton's a little south of it. DeKalb's a little east of it. But in 2016, Trump lost every Metro Atlanta county with the exception of Fayette, Cherokee, and Forsyth. And Republicans used to be able to count on Cobb County and Gwinnett County, but those counties have shifted. They're shifting towards the Democratic side, and they're shifting rather rapidly. And it's because of the racial diversity in those counties, and Republicans in the state have not really done much to reach out to those communities.
Wow. All right, we have about 2 minutes left. It seems like President Trump was doing a lot to reach out to those communities.
Well, he was, and I'm not saying he wasn't. His share of the black vote and Latino vote increased. I mean, I think it was the highest share of those, particularly of African Americans, since 1960 when Richard Nixon was the Republican nominee.
Right.
But you know, it's going to take a constant, sustained effort to get in those communities, and certainly some policies that the president emphasized, opportunity zones, for example. Criminal justice reform, those really played well with those communities. And not just to mention the fact that prior to COVID-19, we had a really good economy and a lot of people were benefiting from it. We have a record low African-American unemployment rate. You had record low Hispanic unemployment rate. People were seeing more opportunity, which is exactly what we said would happen with an economic agenda that focused on tax cuts and deregulation. But you lost a lot more of the white vote than I think people expected. And counties like Cobb County, which is just northwest of Atlanta, a little north of Atlanta, in Gwinnett County, and other parts of Metro Atlanta, where people were starting to really dislike Trump. And these people tend to be more college educated and will vote based on whims rather than what's good for their community or good for the economy.
Okay, we have 40 seconds left. FreedomWorks.org. Concluding thought, how strong do you think the candidates are for Senate?
Look, I think Perdue is very well known to voters. He served 6 years and has done a fairly decent job. Of course, there are things in his voting record I wish he would change, like voting for less spending. But he's been a decent senator. And Kelly Loeffler, she's a new senator. A lot of people don't know her and don't know her record. So she's got to get her face out there, get her name out there and make her pitch for why she should be reelected. And look, I think they can win. I think it's likely that they'll win, but we can't take it for granted. We got to get every person out to vote.
Jason Pye, freedomworks.org. Thanks so much for being with us, Jason. All the best.
Thanks, Jerry.
Okay. Bye-bye.